Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. Today I have with me in studio James D'Angelo. James D'Angelo has had a very varied career as a composer, classical and jazz pianist, organist, music educator, workshop leader, and writer. For the past 20 years, he has developed workshops to empower people to use their voices for therapeutic and holistic purposes. James has become well known in the field of sound healing and sound therapy and has produced two published books on the subject, The Healing Power of the Human Voice and Seed Sounds for Tuning the Chakras. Welcome, James, to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. So, yeah, James, you've had a very rich career, and what fascinates me most is not only your love and your passion for voice, that is where I feel most at home, but also that bridge between music, between composition, between rhythm, between sound, frequency. And we know that sound and music can be seen as important medicines. You're a musician and a composer, and yet it seems like you're being drawn more and more into that field of voice work. How did that come about?
Yes, I think the beginning is when I heard the Harmonic Choir in New York. They were resident mm-hmm. there at St. John the Divine, and they were singing in overtones, wonderful crystalline sound. And I said, this is both ancient and modern, and it's the music of the future. I was really taken with that. And I actually went and did some studies with him. That's called David Hikes. He was the founder. So that was point one. And then when I got to England, I was asked to do music workshops. By then, I'd already attended a workshop of the well-known sound healer Jill Purse in mm-hmm. the British Isles. And so I did these music workshops for the society to which I belong, which was a society that had to do with self-realization, personal, spiritual development. Mm-hmm. And I really got the taste of it. And I thought, well, what could I do along these lines to make something fresh to bridge the gap between my own spiritual aspiration and music? And it seemed to me that the voice was the way, because everyone has a voice, and that would be self-empowerment for them. And so I chose to go down that road. I mean, my voice was already a pretty good voice. I'd done mm-hmm. a fair amount mm-hmm. of singing. So all in all, I was primed to begin that sound healing work.
When you were composing and sitting at the piano and doing your other compositions at the beginning, were you one of the pianists that always hummed along and sang along while you were using your fingers and connecting that?
Well, funnily enough, that would occur, but it was discouraged because, you know, like Glenn Gould in classical music, you know, it's just totally getting in the way of the music. They hear the pianist humming. But I did. I probably hum more when I play jazz. And when I do play jazz, because you get so mm-hmm. taken up with the improvisation that I find myself humming.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What I loved also about, I was reading your book on chakra tuning this past week, and you, similar to the way I feel and think, you would hear the sounds in words. So you would literally write the words with a different spelling, but to make us attentive to the sacred vowels and how these vowels can be found within certain words.
Yeah, appropriate.
Maybe you want to give us some examples. I don't have them in front of me, but it touched me because I hear in sound bites, and I thought you're another crazy fool.
For example, in the sacral chakra, which is water, you know, it has the U vowel, fluid, all these words of creativity, mm-hmm. to produce, to do, to be fruitful, all these mm-hmm. U-sounding words that relate directly to that chakra. That's just, mm-hmm. you know, just one example among them, you know. I like
right.
them, you know. I like, for example, the word yearn, related to the Tantra seed syllable, yum, beginning with bi sound. And because what does the heart do so well? It yearns. Yearns for unity. There's the other.
Yeah.
And in Germany, of course, you know, you've got that wonderful affirmative, yeah, you know, with both the A-R vowel of the heart and the yes sound of the heart joined together.
That's true. Although in Germany, I'm always smiling because normally the words for love, we have the word ja, but the word for love is in many countries has this ah sound. But in Germany, it has the E, Liebe.
Yeah.
You know, so that is very intellectual. And if you know the Germans, they have, of course, big hearts, but they also can approach relationships more from an intellectual standpoint than other cultures might just be head over heels over love. They tend to sometimes be pragmatic, you know, more it's not good or bad. It's just I always wonder if that vowel influences when you say ich liebe or ich hab dich lieb. It just has a different sound than, you know, love or
yes.
these things. Yeah, so you talk about in your book, which I think many people have, you know, taken note of in almost every religion of the world. In the beginning, there was Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And this profound understanding that we are not only made up of stories and Word, but we our origins is sound, is harmonious vibration and toning and humming. So how do you see that is it a matter of becoming more and more conscious that we are very much made up of word and sound, and that we need to also not only take in consciously more language and culture, but also give it out in kindness? I'm very aware of that. Like, what I think much of our illness is due to the fact that people are just putting on the radio without even thinking what's playing, or putting on the news, or ingesting word and sound, which is negative, which is very ugly or divisive.
Yes, it's the irregularity of the sounds. I mean, it's. You know, it's all well and good to say it's a sound event and not to take a view of positive and negative, but I think there is a hierarchy of sound from the negative, the low bass of pop groups, for example, boom, 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 on the one hand, to these crystalline sounds of overtones. I mean, what a gamut we have. You know. But it is, I think, if you want to speak about it, I don't know about the immaterial universe. I haven't got there yet. But as far as anything that you can consider to be the material universe, as fine as it is and as wide as it is, it is formulated at the deepest level with movements. And if you have those movements of those fine particles, you're bound to have something that we call sound. At the very least, we can call it vibration. Mm-hmm. So that's what we are made of, you know. And if you can resonate to make sympathetic vibration through the human voice is already inside the body, all the better for health.
Right. What are your thoughts? Do you think that it's the sound that drives the movement, or do you think that it's the movement that gives way to the vibrational sound, or is it simply
synchronicity? Yes, it is the movement that makes the sound. I mean, you can see it in a tuning fork. That's what they do in the workshop. I show them a very low, I said, look, and I strike the fork, and they can see this blur. And I said, you're seeing pulsation in action. There it is. That blur is actually a sound. You can't hear it, but now if I put it close enough to your ear, you pick up the ear, hears something. But it's movement that produces. It's pulses followed by waves, followed by forms, if it's possible. Yeah, I think that's just the formula.
Because as children, we know that we're constantly making sounds while in movement. And, you know, all the kids are, you know, these are the cars or whatever we're imitating, right? And at some point, this all stops and we become very stuck with our voices, or many people do. Why do you think there's so much shame around the beauty of our voice? We come with this big, powerful voice. We're very connected to it.
I don't know if there's shame. A lot of people, I suppose, don't like the sound of their voices. And that's why in workshops also, I won't ask anyone to make a sound on their own. It's always a collective, so they feel part of the whole. And so they won't have any feelings of inferiority. I mean, children, because they haven't yet been conditioned to the world, they have that spiritual freedom that it's all about joy and it's all about play, and that's it. But as you grow up, your responsibilities increase, and all this and the things that happen, and you begin to, your personality gets more grafted into you, this disappears.
Do you think it's possible to create a world which is not only in the music class, but everywhere so vibrantly alive with singing and humming and toning?
I think it is possible. I have a friend here who's doing just that and working with children, both disabled and not disabled. And she's, introducing these kinds of things into their life. And also the teachers are coming along and being shown how to do this. So there are signs. But it does have to begin early. Keep the channels open. This is what the Rudolf Steiner education does. He would forbid, that means to watch television, not to have computers. They won't do mathematics until a certain age. You know, it's all strictly seeing the developmental times in which you can introduce things and the child can handle it. So a right education can go a long way. Yeah.
Well, I've heard somewhere along the line that every child has perfect pitch at the age of 4, but if it's not trained, then it can slip away. Do you have any
experience with that? Well, that's an interesting concept, an idea. I haven't heard that. I have perfect pitch, but in relative pitch, which means that I can recognize any note that I hear on a given instrument that I have had contact with. So, but what about people who can't match a tone, never mind have perfect pitch? What about them? They call them tone deaf. I think it's purely something in their karma or psychology that has put a stop on a natural ability.
Well, what I know from working with voices is that 99.9% of the people that say they're tone deaf are not tone deaf.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
It has a lot to do with, and what I always say to people is that, you know, as children, we're taught a lot about matching colors. So you have a lot the matching shapes, right? Where's the yellow? This is the yellow. Find the yellow bus. Find the yellow dress. And where's the red? And where's the square? And where's the circle? But we don't learn. We simply don't learn how to match tones with different, you know, also with different instruments, the same as we would look for the circle.
No, see it. Our teachers don't see it as necessary to life, where the matching colors seems some practical thing to do, but that's all.
Yeah, maybe. But I think if people would match as kids, you know, as young kids, they would play with matching tones. It would all be there. And there would be very few tone-deaf people running around the world, because I think really that it's very innate for us to hear the right tone.
They never take up singing, that it doesn't matter that they're tone-deaf. Because they still have a voice and they still speak. So it's a question of getting them singing and being able to actually look at the music and be able to sing it off the page. But there's so many natural voice groups now, particularly in England, I notice, and I'm part of that network, and they don't have to sing, and there's plenty of joy to be gained, you know, without having to read music.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And also the, I mean, how is it, have you had that experience too, though, that the more you open the range of your voice, of course, the more parts of your body you're going to be able to touch or influence? You know, if you have a very, I mean, every voice is beautiful, but if a voice only has, let's say, four notes, it has less expression or less, how do you say, you know, the chakras are maybe not, the range is simply, the range of motion of the voice also, it's like being flexible in your body. So there's a beauty in singing and in increasing that range.
I could see what you're saying. I can hear what you're saying about that, but you don't really need more. I mean, Vedic chanting is based on four notes. You know, that's all they do.
That's true.
And as I say to people in the workshops, when notes come out, it's all about intuition. I hardly ever assign to them a note. I say, okay, we're going to do it on this note. You know, allow their intuition to flow, because it's the quality of the vowel, the quality of the consonant that matters, and not ultimately what note they're producing that vowel or consonant.
But I think it is
advantageous to have an extended range. Certainly four notes is very small, I would say.
Yeah.
People have, you know, an octave or eight note range at least. Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's true. I mean, maybe it's a beautiful thought, like a haiku, to say that one can express the same amount of beauty in one beautifully sung tone than in a whole aria, that it's not relevant how many tones we have. It has really relevant the intention for which we, you know, from where we're coming. Yeah.
Because the case can be made that in one tone there exist hundreds of tones in the overtone series as it rises up. So, I mean, that's what, you know, Rudolf Steiner, funnily enough, said that very thing, that eventually, you know, music will just come back and just be, go back to this one universal tone. So, of course, that's a long way away.
Beautiful. James, we're going to take a very short break.
Right.
And then we are going to come back and explore more on toning and singing.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm your host, Kara Johnson, and with me today in studio is composer, pianist, organist, educator, author of the books The Healing Power of the Human Voice and Seat Sounds for Tuning the Chakras, Mr. James Yangelo. And we were talking about the intent or the intuition behind tones, behind music. Yeah. How does that work? When you go into workshops, you're working with a group of people, and do you work with guiding them into silence and then into movement, or how can we imagine
both?
Yeah.
Those things. I mean, you cannot do a voice ritual. I call them rituals, not exercises. Without following it by, let us call it meditation, because you now, taken that sound in, you've assimilated it, it's become mantric by its repetition, and now you tune into that experience. That's what I ask them to do. Tune into your experience. I'm not looking for a particular experience that everyone should be having as a result of doing 5 minutes of whatever I've given to them. And then with some things, with my consonant sound, I actually have movements that very much in the tradition of Tai Chi, they aren't, they're just things I have created, but have that soft flow and movement that it encourages the sound. I can also, through imagination, through that movement. And that is how they can put more intent and emotion into it. I do think that the movements have a role to play.
You were in the one book I was reading. You assigned the K to the crown, which is interesting. And what I also love, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that you talk about different scales and different chakras and different energy centers, but what I really respected is that you, similar to what you're saying now, is that everybody has their own instrument, their own experience, their own body, and that we need to, well, that's also been my experience, we need to tune into ourselves and to tune into the tone and to see where it resonates with us. That's what I understood from your work, and that you actually were not necessarily d'accord with people assigning, that this chakra is this tone and this chakra is this tone, because we're much too, like you were saying, one tone can have many overtones and one vibration. I mean, one tone can also have many different colors, right? A trumpet playing the same tone has a very different sound than a cello. And, that's brassy as a very, so you can't just say that it's that interval. That note, right? You have to allow it to work inside of you.
That's right. I mean, there are various ways that you can come to these tones. I like the idea of contemplating the place where you wish the song to be. Spend a couple of minutes doing that before you emit the tone. I do have a scale, and I chose in the end that great and universal scale, the pentatonic. It has just five notes, and so you go to the next octave and you reach the brow, and another octave when you reach the crown. And you might ask, well, if it's intuitive and now you have a scale, what's going on? Well, it's just the idea. It's purely psychological. I say, I haven't found the answer. I found an answer about the whirl of the chakras. And as they increase, we are increasing the frequency of notes. We're rising up. And it's this pentatonic scale is symbolic of this rise. Symbolic, that's the key word, of this rising up through all seven. And it's a very comfortable scale. If you start on the F below middle C, every voice can do it. There's no strain. You know.
And what I found interesting is, I mean, for the musicians out there, normally in a normal major scale or minor, the fifth would be, well, in the root chakra, and then the fifth would be your throat. But in the pentatonic scale,
you get the perfect
then the heart.
And
the perfect fifth is the heart.
That's the way, one of the ways I came to it. I started by seeing, saying that, well, we in the West, what do we consider to be the tone of centrality? And all right, well, I accepted C, but I could not place it at the root. Our center is the heart. Place C at the center. And there's been research by the heart math people out in Colorado, and they've measured the, you know, this L energy field is about 250 cycles around the heart. Well, that's getting close to middle C. So there's maybe scientific evidence corroborating it. But again, I say it's not necessary. I mean, there are scales that put the an augmented interval between, say, in the heart that I came upon. So it's a world of thing. I put some of the things in the back of the seed sounds of what others have come up with, you know.
I mean, if you think of how vast our heart is and the energy field that it creates, then I think there's a multitude of notes and tones and harmonics that can be a part of that field.
But we hold a lot of things in the heart. It's not just about brain mind. I mean, brain. And that came out when in heart math again, because they said, well, look, people had heart transplants and they took on personality traits of the person from whom they received the heart. It's as though these traits were embedded or in the heart. In its energy field, who knows? But but that's been documented.
And I think even memories, that some people have received heart transplants and they could really see what happened at the end of the life of that other person where they had received the heart.
Yes. Yeah, we have it in our language. We say, well, he learned it, she learned it by heart, not by brain. So, to memorize something. Yeah.
You mentioned a study in your in the one book. You mentioned a study that was done with humming and schizophrenia, which was done at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Can you share with us a little bit more about that study? I found it absolutely fascinating.
Yes, I can't remember the title. It's by a psychiatrist at a hospital in the Midwest. It's in a book called Music and Miracles, a series of wonderful articles edited by Don Campbell. He was a great pioneer for music education and music health. And when he read the Upanishads, the Hindu tradition, that M was our humming, or the sound of M was our link to the divine and to our true self. He just simply put two and two together and said, well, my patients who have schizophrenia, they've lost touch with their real self. They're hallucinating. Mm-hmm. Could I possibly reduce their hallucinations if I put them on a regimen of humming? I don't recall how many times a day they did it, but after a period of time, he documented that... yes, he had, I think the figure was 69% of his patients reduced their hallucinations after this regimen of humming. I mean, there's so many applications of it, and Jonathan Goldman, the well-known sound healer teacher in America, has written recently the Humming Effect book.
I was amazed. Yeah, we had him on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And pages it contains. I thought at first, how much can you write about humming? But I was quite impressed.
Well, and I think most people don't even know that there are even different places to hum, right? You can hum through your lips and the tip of your tongue and the back of the tongue and the back of the tongue and the tip of the tongue at the same time. And
I get to do a vocal exercise with saying things like gong, gang, and ging in the back of the throat, out comes a hum. Mm-hmm. It's just a natural after effect.
Is that one of the main sounds that it's definitely one of the main sounds I use, especially to regenerate the voice. Is that also one of the main sounds you use to help people to start to awaken that beautiful, clear, vibrational frequency that they carry?
Yes, and also just to give them some flexibility. I started as a warm-up exercise. I said it's one of the few things where I call it an exercise, where they have to make this sound and without moving their jaw or their tongue, and only make it through the throat muscles, larynx. And some find it difficult because the gong, 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 gong sound, it's like gargling. Gong is, close to the gargle sound that people can make. And the gang and the ging are a little bit more difficult to achieve, but I don't mind. They just keep the one sound. In a day, and then I'll bring it back at some point during a day.
Yeah.
To do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't say that it's geared to anything in particular regarding healing. I just do treat it as a vocal exercise.
No. Well, I've done overtones with gong and gong, gong, gong. These go between gong and ging. You can play with that, and then the overtones awaken.
And there are different ways to produce the overtones. I had excellent teacher, Roland Rachele, who's now back in the United States, but I met him here, and he was a master. He could sing what we will call the music counterpoint. He would sing a melody, and each melody tone had its own overtone. So in effect, he was singing two melodies at once.
Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. It was phenomenal. It is phenomenal. Mm.
It's fascinating how many of these things it's like the mysteries of the world lie within us, and we haven't yet taken the time to explore them. But some of them have, and you definitely are doing a lot of explorations with the voice. Talk to us about your book, The Healing Voice, or let me make sure I have tell me the title, The Healing Power
of the
Human Voice. About how can we heal?
Well,
how can we
it's a buzzword, healing. I mean, it's moving people towards wholeness of themselves. That's why I say focusing on the chakras, because I say to people, let's think of it as your soul life. And in your soul, you have these various attributes, which can be in perfect balance or not. For example, in the solar plexus, you can have authority, which is clearly detached, it's strong, but if you take it too far in one direction, you then become an aggressive person, or if you go in the other direction, you can't even bring yourself to exercise any authority. So an awe is a great vowel for the solar plexus, so it's a major example for me. And so if people are using, and it's a prelude to meditation, in that silent period is as potent as when you make the sound, if you really live in that world. So it will do the work of wholeness, and that's how I see healing. And if their physical body experiences good things, if they begin to relax, and then people often say that, my headache is gone or this pain is gone. That's, to me, a byproduct. I'm not aiming to cure them of any particular illnesses of the body. Although the Taoist sounds are aimed at the organs of the body to release the stress on them or the overheating. And I've adopted them into my work. But they are also psychological because each organ of the body is connected with certain emotions.
Right. So, right. The liver is
so
with anger
essentially and... a psychological process, not a bodily process.
I mean, that's the fascinating thing with tone. I'm just fascinated by this, is you can create one tone and you can tone for yourself. You can also create that one tone in unity and unite a room together and breathe together and create one heartbeat more or less together with 50, you know, 100, 5,000 people. They could also be singing that tone, and you can also break it into harmony and have many, many tones, but still be united. I mean, I don't know where else is this possible to everybody have, you know, their own tone going on, and yet we're one. It's like it's like a beautiful kaleidoscope. It's like an incredible piece of art. I just find it magical. It's really magical that the voice can do that.
Certainly, I mean, the overtones are an example, the one in the many, and the same thing with harmony in Western music. We, in the West, you know, there's not much in the Eastern world. They're interested in the refinement of individual tones and bending them. We're so much, and I am, you know, playing a pianist, so much taken up with this idea of multiple tones all sounding all at once. And it's
great. Right, the harmonics.
Indeed. Mm.
Yes, very beautiful. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I think that's true. In the East, it's a lot with a drone underneath and then exploring rhythms and melody. And in the West, we have that also, but we also have the harmonics that can be very fascinating and very complex. Exactly. So, James, we're going to take a little small break again and then come back and then dive into more questions on the practical ways that we can implement voice work into our lives.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, everybody. You are at Voice Rising. I'm your host, Kara Johnstead, and with me today in studio is James D'Angelo, and we're talking about the healing power of voice. James, many, many spiritual traditions talk about silence being golden and this need that we have to like you said, rest in a way, rest in the beauty after we've created sound. And yet, what do you think would happen in our world if we all just became silent? What would happen if the birds stopped singing? And I find this a fascinating question simply because so many people feel almost guilty when they make too much noise, and yet the children, when they're babbling, they're probably the happiest of all. And so I was wondering what your thoughts are of sound and silence and finding that balance.
I think silence, I mean, it's actually quite difficult to define what it is, because you can't really find a totally silent world. I mean, even in silence, the thought processes go on, and the heartbeat. You know, if you can go to into one of those chambers where they can shut out as much sound, you're able to hear the blood going through the bloodstream and the heart pounding. So it's very difficult to be in this. It's all in relative terms about what it means to have silence. Mm-hmm. We don't, on the other hand, want to be bombarded by too many vicarious vibrations all over the place. I mean, but we have to know how to deal with it when we're in it. If I were in a discotheque, which I don't think I've ever been in such a place. I was no way out. I would have to get inside. What I would do is I would go inside the sound, try to go beneath the surface of it, to get to a place where I could, believe it or not, appreciate it. Silence is relative, and people can do wonderful meditation and be out in the middle of a place with all kinds of sounds that might distract them. It's a question of focus, of what they. It's about focusing. It's about attention. But they put their attention to. So, and some environments might be very, very good. I mean, coming back to Jonathan Goldman, I think his best recording is of tuning forks. You know, it's just the blending of tuning forks, and it just wafts over you. And I think it can bring quite a beautiful state of attention and peace in it, and yet it's a mixture of vibrations. It's not necessarily harmonious in the blending of the tones, but it somehow feels that way, and it feels almost angelic. So you don't necessarily have it. You can have a sonic atmosphere, and it'd be very good. Waterfalls, right. Birds, as you mentioned. I don't know that we have to. It's just relative, this word silence.
I always love that silent and listen are you know the same letters.
Yes, our anagram.
Right.
Yeah, anagrams, I know.
Right?
I point that out before. That's it.
And also, I always sense that when I go into what we would call then term silence, it's actually to tune more into our own inner voice or our own tone. You have a practice in or a ritual in your book talking about how to find our own true tone, the tone that is comfortable for us, which might be a starting point for some of these meditations and rituals. Can you share a little bit more for people that would like to explore how to find their true tone?
Well, first they have to start in a meditative state and come, get as quiet as they can to prepare themselves to make a tone. Then the next step I have them do is this first breathing out without anything happening in the throat to make a tone. And so literally they're trying to ooze out a note from their... letting it flow, and finally some note does appear. It might take 5 minutes in the process, who knows, something like that. But then the difficulty becomes, how do I tell what note that is that I've produced? Because that you would do every day or twice a day. You keep doing it over 2 weeks, seeing? What tone is appearing? Today it was B, his is C sharp, oh, F, and so on. Calculating. And after 2 weeks, if you have a tone that dominates, you could say, this could be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. That's the way I do it.
Yeah.
But then, without a musical instrument, then they'd have to be able to match the note and know and so forth. So they need a little bit of technical knowledge to find out what that note is, that they, so it can be matched in the future.
What I really appreciate about your work is this idea of release and receiving and then singing. I think, in my experience, there's a lot of, take deep breaths, which put a lot of pressure underneath our folds, and a lot of, going out into the world in production modus. And the voice really works so well. And one hears it also in your speaking voice, if the pressure is taken out of it. And when you describe that practice of, releasing on oohs, maybe inaudible, and then adding tones, you can just feel how the body starts to naturally find the right placement. And that is a great gift, because
you're getting it, the different terms. I'm going to call it the real self and the separate self. Sometimes one is the ego, but I don't like the ego getting a bad name. It's just a word that means I. It's a question of which I. Mm-hmm. But what we're doing in these practices is telling this ego I, please step aside for now. Thank you very much. And this is something this is not you, and I'm coming back to me now, to I, to the real I, rather than this any sense of a falseness. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the only process. There's only one consciousness. People I know talk about levels of consciousness, but in those levels, God, what they mean is they're stripping away the impediments little by little, pulling this egoistic stuff away, 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 and more of themselves is revealed.
Right, right. Beautiful. You also talk about, and many of us know this, but you have shared this, and this is about your work, about how laughter can boost the immune system. And there are many, many people have healed themselves from disease only through laughter. And do you work a lot with laughter in your groups, or do you also not only laugh once in a while, but added to your daily sonic diet plan?
And one way I do it is I'm a joke teller. So I when I'm with groups, and then I find myself laughing before I get to the very end of the joke, because I know what's coming. But you can also obviously create laughter. It depends on how free you are with yourself to be able to play with the sounds that you think of as laughter sounds. You know what I mean? The same thing applies to the smile. You know, in the Eastern medicine, they talk about an inner smile. But if you just put a small smile on your face, and if you can remember, then the mind thinks, oh, I'm supposed to be happy. And it moves in the direction of the smile. So that goes hand in hand for me with the laughter business.
Yeah.
I do laughter, I just get it started. I just spontaneous laugh, because we know it's contagious. And people then just take it. I mean, before you know it, most everyone is. But some people cannot laugh. Some people cannot laugh. And it's very, very sad. And they do feel left out. It's tricky doing it in workshops. Another thing that I'll do with it, which is uproarious, is you lay on the floor and in a crisscross fashion, placing in resting your head on another person's belly, because, of course, the laughter is from the belly. So then the laughter gets going, the belly starts moving, their head starts bobbing, and they can't. And then they just hilarious. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
The bobbing heads.
I really need a residential workshop where I can do more things for that. And one day, I tend not to do the laughter, because I want to focus on other things. But I do. In the residentials, we do it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very,
But another point, Kara, is that laughter is about an action of the abdominal region with an energy that's being generated and rising up through you.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
isn't literally about sound, and I show people that I can produce a silent laughter, all the convulsions, everything that looks like laughter, but without any sound involved. So mm-hmm. that's a point to take on board. Is it the vibration of the vocal cords, or is it more about what's going on in the abdominal region?
That's a good idea. I was trying to think of my sister when we were small. She used to have these funny laughs, like this kind of this kind of hissing.
Yeah, almost just breath.
Just breath. And there was no tone. And then I've met people that laugh almost backwards, like a donkey, you know, like this kind of like
yeah,
it's wonderful.
Different vowels at different times. You know, I think you can laugh on about five different vowels. More or less, you know.
And it's funny how we associate the O's with immediately with Santa Claus, right?
Yeah. Placing O in the solar plexus, yes.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, the big belly.
And the big
heave
belly.
O, when you pull the rope, you're pulling it right into the belly area. Heave ho, and it's a courageous place in us. And all right, men, ho, and you know off goes the army. Yeah.
Yeah, and also a lot of the work that we've managed physically, you know, if you think of the big ships that used to be powered through manpower, the big oars, the you know, the fields of all the things that have been harvested, there were always songs and rhythms to go along with that. Now, I think we're losing a lot of this. I think it doesn't seem like a lot of people know any of the folk songs anymore, the songs that helped us just... We seem to have given up our own power, and sometimes we put on a radio or a talk show, but that wasn't the same as listening to someone whistling in the kitchen or singing while they were hanging the laundry or, you know, all those lovely things.
Before recordings, people gathered around the piano at home, and then they sang these songs that they knew. Singing is the first level of sound health, you know. And you watch choirs sometimes on television, let's say, of a concert, and every face looks completely angelic. The concentration, like their whole false personality is falling away. They are in them, their real place. It's just living proof that singing does change something. And they've also done experiments that show that the heart rate of a choir begins to entrain where everybody's, the pulsation of the hearts are matching one another.
Right.
Right. Singing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I have a couple more questions for you. One is, if we come to those choirs, those beautiful voices, and at the same time we know as sound healers or voice workers that the body loves to move, why are so many choirs so stiff,
rigid,
and standing rigid when they sing those beautiful tones? I would think that the tones would love to fly out with a little bit of movement.
Yeah, you ask a very good question here, and I've never thought of it. Why aren't the choirs allowed to move to it? Maybe because they're too packed in.
They fall off the bleachers and the risers.
And there's no room to move, you know, and... So I think it's going to be a long time coming before classical choirs start making movements. But these natural voice choirs, I've seen them. They do move a bit.
Mm. Well, I would love if the classical choirs out there, if you get inspired by this show, to start moving or swaying. I would also love to see an orchestra move a little bit more, although we don't want to have the bow in somebody's eye or something, but it would be good to see.
And again,
see
you are not distracted. You know, the idea that the musicians have to wear black clothing for concerts in classical music is another thing I think is not necessary. I think a lovely color that attracts the eye is fine to go with the sounds. So color is a factor I would like to see. And the other thing is, for me, is no applause. It destroys the aura of the sound that has been created.
Yes, I agree. James, you know so much now about music and harmony and voice, and I know you're still exploring and still deepening everything. If you could leave our listeners with one golden nugget about what you've learned from The Voice that really changed you and you would love to inspire them to explore, what would that be?
Oh, you put me on the spot here, I must say.
Yeah. Hi, George.
Yes, I know. They say that the voice is something that gives away your state of mind and your character, and I agree. I can pick up things in people by the way they're speaking to me. So listen much more to the voice, so that it really reflects what you and who you are.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Give us one time quickly your homepage where people can get to know your work and register.
The website is www.soundspirit.co.uk.
Yeah, Soundspirit. Thank you, James, for being with me. James DeAngelo, pick up his books, you guys. Go explore his work. And I hope to have you back on the show sometime soon.